Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat.
And this is your other hostess, Hanako. The Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast is an audio program where we discuss your favorite and not so favorite science fiction TV shows and films.
Today we will discuss Salem, which airs on WGN Sundays, 10/9 Central. We will recap season one and discuss the latest events on the season two premiere, Cry Havoc. All right, Hanako, this is our new witchy deal since I have grown tired of Vampire Diaries and the originals.
Yes, we'll discuss that at another time. Yeah. I think this is our first podcast for Salem?
Yeah, we wanted to do it last year. I don't know. Something happened. Blah, blah. School.
School on both parts and me moving and you moving from New York to D.C. And yeah, I think we just kind of got busy with life. But yeah. So.
Yeah, but Hanako was rallying. She's like, now let me tell you, look, Salem comes on April such and 5th. You better watch it. We're going to do a show. She kept reminding me she was not having it. She was not having it. So
yeah, I keep telling you, I'm trying to get back into this. So, and there's just so much out there and you know, I can talk way better than I can write or blog because sometimes when I'm writing, my thoughts change. And then, of course, you know, you kind of you watch something once and you have your thoughts. And then if you watch it a second time, you know, maybe your opinion on certain things change. And it's just better to get that out verbally for you. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Blogging. Yeah. Mine is a tundra wasteland as well. So, you know, that's okay. That's fine. That's why we have the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. So, Salem, I think the reason why I chose to watch this show mainly because it was new. I had never heard of WGN. Witches. We were dealing, I missed Buffy a little bit. I believe that Vampire Diaries was doing a little bit with witches. Penny Dreadful was out. And I was like, you know, why not? Let me check this out. So I think one of my first things that I really thought about Salem is that the first few episodes were really jarring. I mean, I almost stopped watching because there was a hanging scene, Hanako, where they hung a witch and she twitched and maybe urinated on herself or something.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a bit much. And I was just like, I can't, you know,
Salem is not for the faint of heart.
No, I think it calmed down a little. I feel like it's not as disturbing.
Yeah, but you know, we're only in episode one of the second season. So, you know, maybe they're going to give it to us gradually. But I mean, it was a little bit on the disgusting side. You know, you've got this witch pox that's now hit the town, or you know, I guess maybe we should do a season one recap for.
Yeah, so first we start out with I think the main star of the show, which is Lady Sibley. She was in love with John Alden, and she maybe had no family or whatever, but she wanted to live a certain lifestyle. She had sex with John, got pregnant. They weren't married. John was out to war, so she ended up marrying George Sibley, like this old disgusting man or whatever, and
basically the leader of the town, I think.
Yeah, he's the leader of the town. So she was pregnant with John's baby, but she didn't want anyone to know because it was, you know, shameful to be pregnant out of wedlock. And so
and they put you to death for that too. So they either put you to death or they banished you. You know, Isaac, one of the characters in one of the main characters in the first season, That was kind of how the show started, because Isaac and his girlfriend were caught fornicating out of wedlock, and he was actually branded with an F on his forehead for fornicator. Yeah. And, you know, it also comes with the public shame, and you're kind of looked at as the town pariah. So I think basically what happened, John and Mary were in love. And again, like Kat said, she got pregnant. But at the same time, John Alden was sent off to war. And I think probably to get him out of the way so that George Sibley could have Mary. And while he was gone, she found out she was pregnant. Of course, she can't be unwed and pregnant, especially with him being gone. And so she talked to her handmaiden Tituba, who turns out to be a witch. Mm. And she takes her into the woods, and they perform this ritual, which gets rid of the baby. And
yeah, sort of an abortion. At the
same, right. She does it, but at the same time, she's given this this new energy, this power, where over the next 7 years, she kind of hones it, and she becomes this really powerful witch in the town of Salem. Right. So,
right. And I think too, her witch energy is kind of fueled by her guilt of having done evil by, in a Puritan town, having, I guess, killed a baby at birth. And she feels, you know, endlessly guilty about that, but she's kind of become one with being a witch. She is, you know, securing her place in the town. Everything's going fine. Everything's, you know, as happy as can be. And then John shows back up in town, and that's where kind of Salem begins, right?
Yes. Yes. Because, one of the reasons I think why she got rid of the baby was because John was, at that point, he had been believed to have been killed in war. So she thought he was dead for that 7 years until he shows back up in town.
Okay.
And that kind of, you know, it kind of jars something for her, because she now, here is the love of her life back in town. She's married to someone else who, during that time, she has pretty much taken control of George Sibley. She's made him an invalid. And through that, she has become the most powerful person in the town now, because she acts on her husband's behalf, which no one knows that she is actually controlling him through witchcraft.
A frog that is embedded in his throat.
Yeah.
And she makes him throw up every night in order to, what, feed it with a tit, a nipple that is on her back or something.
Yeah. So the animal is her familiar, and yeah, so, oh, but anyway, so yes, so she has all of this guilt now, because, you know, one, the man that she thought she lost is back, and he's alive, and she's married. Not only she promised to wait for him, but of course, thinking that he was dead, she married someone else. So now she's gone back on that promise, so she can't be with him. And then now she has this guilt that she knows that she got rid of their love child, and he has no clue about it. So she's got a lot of guilt to work off of. And then at the same time, she's trying to, the witches in the town are trying to complete this, this thing called the Grand Rite. And it's basically where it will give the witches power. And she is the person who is supposed to be pulling this together, doing everything that they need. So they have to have like a certain number of people accused as witches and then died. They have to spill innocent blood in order for this grand rite to happen. And she's all for it until he comes back into town And it kind of throws a monkey wrench into her plans because now she's got this emotional attachment that she didn't have before. And it's kind of making the witches weary of her because they don't know where her loyalties lie.
Now, and when Kaneko talks about these witches, there is a group of elder witches that kind of lurk in the forest and they speak in tongues and kind of no one knows that they're there, but they're kind of guiding Chichibu and Lady Sibley into the Grand Rite, which is, of course, to take down the town of Salem and make it a home for themselves, a safe haven of sorts. Mm-hmm. So... we do have a preacher in town. He is one of the late entrants to Fringe. He was on Fringe, and his name, his actor's name is Seth Gable, but he
plays Cotton Mather.
Right, but he was Lincoln mm-hmm. on Fringe. So, but now he plays this kind of wayward preacher who frequents the whorehouse. And he drinks and he has all, you know, he's very rebellious and he kind of keeps it on the DL. And if anyone knows, they keep it on the DL. But, you know, he kind of runs the town the way he wants. But, of course, there's witches running rampant throughout the town. And in comes Stephen Lang as his dad, Increase Mather, who to change and rectify the whole situation and rid Salem of these damn dirty witches.
Yeah, and Increase Mather was also a witch.
I wasn't sure on that. I wasn't sure on that.
I think he was. Yeah, either that or he had.
He was just kind of. Yeah,
he came in, you know, basically trying to screw things up. You know, and it was just, I guess there's always a power struggle between the witches as far as who's more powerful, who's in charge. And for a while, he was on Lady Sibley's case quite a bit because he felt like something wasn't right with her husband. And he kind of recognized it as George being possessed or incapacitated through witchcraft. And for a while, he was very close to getting it out, and then something happens towards the end of the season that kind of knocks that out of the way. But we're neglecting a huge part of the story.
We're getting to it in bits and pieces. We're gonna lead into it, but you know, I just wanted to get out there that Stephen Lang, this is a Miles Quaritch from Avatar. Okay, he came and he just chewed the scenery, not in a bad way, but he, like, there was cursing, there was biblical verses being thrown everywhere, there was people being called dirty whores, dirty witches, there was very kinky torture scenes of witches. I mean, he just came on there and he clowned. Okay. And so if you want to see something really great, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, maybe I'll watch Salem, blah, blah, do that, because he is delightfully evil. It's delicious.
Yeah, he was a force to be reckoned with.
I love that past tense.
I don't know. The previews for next week's episode.
I didn't see it. Oh my God.
Well, I don't know if it's him. I just know that someone shows up that freaks Cotton out, and he's like, but you're supposed to be dead. So we don't know if it's his father. We don't know if it's John Alden, because some of the people think that John Alden is dead at this point, which we'll get to. So it's just kind of weird. We don't know who it is. But Isaac. If his father shows up, I'm just gonna drop the mic and move out the room, because it's just, you know.
Okay. So what are we neglecting? You were getting ready to
Mercy freaking Lewis.
Okay, now let me tell you a nut about a clown session. Now, if you thought some cedary chewing was happening with Stephen Lang, let me tell you about Mercy Lewis. This chick, first she was possessed by Lady Sibley, right?
Yes.
Okay.
She was being tortured and possessed, she was being tortured through witchcraft, where she was being made to see different things that other people couldn't see. She was being attacked. She was being bitten by things that no one else could see. And this was all part of Lady Sibley and the Coven's way of throwing a panic into Salem to try to start accusing people of being witches and to get the innocent blood that they needed to complete the grand rite.
Right.
So at some point, Mercy realizes what's going on. She figures it out, and she starts embracing what's happening to her. And not only that, she starts realizing that she has a little bit of power within her. Mary Sibley takes her in to kind of groom her, and this little puppet takes on a life completely of her own. And she is now one of the largest forces and one of the largest opponents that Mary Sibley has in the town of Salem. They're both battling for power. And it's so, in a way, it's admirable because she went from this, like I said, she went from being a puppet, you know, a toy, a tool being used for a different purpose. And now she's like one of the most powerful people in the town. But at the same time, I am so ready for her character to die.
You know what? I like her character because she is the upstart that comes in. She has this power. She knows how to use it. She had to learn it on her own. She went through a lot. And people
between Tituba and Mary.
Right. And she's been betrayed. She's been used. And all of a sudden, you know, she, with good intentions, went to the elder witches to try to, you know, get them to champion her. But, you know, like Anakin Skywalker, that, you know, nobody wanted to listen to her.
A Star Wars or a Star Trek reference was going to come in.
I was watching The New Hope today, so it's coming. So, I, you know, just like that, you know, nobody wanted to give her a chance. They always talk down to her. No, you can't do it this way. No, you know, don't use the Force. You're too old, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she just went off on her own and she started killing the younglings and the elder witches and Jedis and everybody you can throw in it because she could. She knew she was more powerful than them. And what that tells us, Hanako, is that Mercy, like, what were these witches doing if they could not handle Mercy?
Right. Well, here's the other thing, too. I think I want to say that most of the witches' power in Salem, including Mary Sibley's, you know, like you said, it comes from different places. It comes from a place of them feeling like they deserve to have their own place in the world. Mary's comes from a, you know, feeling of guilt and also a little bit of passion, I think, because she's putting her energy into something she can't control because she can't control the other circumstances of her life, being her love life with John Alden, her, you know, her dead child, that sort of thing. But I think Mercy's comes from a place of rage and indignation. And anybody will tell you, when you come from a place of anger, that can make you very powerful because
like Anakin, you know, Skywalker.
Yeah, it fuels you. So, and you know, she, at this point, she has no other attachments. You know, she, her father is dead. You know, her father was concerned for her, but apparently also he was abusive towards her sexually. And you know, at some point last season, Mercy gets a group of followers. There's a group of five girls who pretty much become her apprentices. They follow her and they do her bidding, and they killed her father. And so that was like her only familial tie. Her mom had been long dead. She has no brothers and sisters. And now she's a town outcast. Like, she lives in the woods with the corpses of the dead that they discard in the woods. And the way Salem is set up, they have their church and they have their consecrated ground. But there are people who are banished or they're disgraced and they are not seen as fit to be buried within the town. So when they die, they get rolled into the woods and their corpses are just literally dropped. So you just literally have a whole expanse of land that's nothing but corpses and dead bodies. Yeah, she's kind of made herself a home there.
Doesn't she lay in the corpses like Sasha from Walking
Dead?
Yeah,
and I was just about to say that. If you watched The Walking Dead and you saw the episode last week where Sasha laid in the corpses, imagine that times like 100, and that's Mercy Lewis in her new home. I mean, and you've got corpses in all states of decay. You've got them. Just some of them die. Some of them were the quote unquote witches that were hung. So she's got all these corpses, and she's also, I think, drawing her power from them somehow. But so she's here, and she's in this expanse, and she's got these girls who follow her. But then at the end of last season, to make a point, Mary Sibley has all these girls killed. So now Mercy has more anger because these were the girls that were supposed to be her coven. These are the girls she was supposed to protect and train and bring up. And now she has no one. So at this point, I think she's completely detached from humanity. And she's just all out for revenge. As she said in the first episode, she's ready to go. She's ready to knock Mary Sibley off her pedestal. And she's ready to take over the town. And I don't know. She killed the elder witches, and without remorse, without any hesitation. So Mercy.
She didn't want to, though. She didn't go there to do that. She did not go there to do that.
But, I have to say this. When you spit in someone's face like the elder witch did to Mercy, and especially when it's black gunk that you've got covering her face, just one spitting in somebody's face, that's automatic.
What is that? What do you do that for? Who does that?
I don't know. It's like an ultimate sign of disrespect. But again, spit in someone's face, that's an ultimate ass whooping. So when Mercy turned around, I said, oh, she's not about to let that go. And she stopped. She turned around, and then all of a sudden, her new girls, which I don't know where she's pulling these girls from, because obviously you would think that the townspeople would notice that their teenage girls are missing or acting weird, but she's pulling these girls from somewhere, and I mean, they are doing some drastic things. They lured a guy out of the town, tied him to a tree. She cut off his penis and replaced it with a crow. Who does that? So she can control him. I mean, yes, I understand they're using animals and familiars to control people, but that was just...
Oh my God, that was so intense, because he thought he was going to have him a fresh virgin maiden out in the woods. Then he thought he was going to get him an orgy.
And instead, get your dick cut off and you get it replaced with a crow. And now crazy witch number one can control you with the crow between your legs.
Not only that it gets cut off, but it's replaced with a bird.
It was so bizarre, but it was like, that's when I know, I was like, oh, this crazy bitch has to go. Because if she can do that, there's no telling what else she's going to do in this town. And it's like, we're only on episode one. We've got, nine episodes, maybe? I mean, we may have more than that. I think last season they did 13 episodes. So far, what I've seen listed for this season, I've only seen six or seven.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they only have an order for a half season, and then maybe they'll do like they did last year and kind of, expand for a full season. I don't know how they're working it. Maybe they're waiting to see what the reviews are. But Salem is like you said before, I had never really heard of WGN. I mean, I knew that it was a station here. Not very notable, but this show came out of nowhere, and it's like from the first moment I saw it, I was hooked. And then the nice thing about this show is to kind of what they did last season before the show premiered, and what they also did at the beginning of this season was they do a 20 minute intro. It kind of tells you how the origin of the story starts, and then they give you a little bit of background about the real Salem, historically, what the witch trials were, how they started, who were some of the key players in the Salem witch trials back in the 1600s. And then they go into how they came up with the story, what they tried to keep authentic, what they deviated from, just to kind of make it their own. And it's like, it's 20 minutes of fascinating TV. If you've never been into the Salem witch trials at all, you know, aside from reading The Crucible in high school, it's something that's actually worth watching, because you find out so much more about these characters. You find out so much more, well, not even the characters, so much more about the people of real Salem. And then it goes into the premise of the show and the characters and how they incorporated the real life people into the show. And it's really interesting, but it's like, this show came out of nowhere, and it's like, it's one of the ones I absolutely have to watch.
I feel like it is really that good. I mean, I did not expect it. It is a little intense. For some reason, I feel like they've scaled back the overly disturbing things, like the urinating, hanging thing, because that was almost it for me. That, because you know how, like, for whatever reason, I'm getting a little young in my life, and I can't handle this stuff anymore. So that was too much. But the crow, I mean, you seem like that would be too much for me, but that was just bizarre and hilarious to me.
Right.
I think the torture by Increase Mather, Tituba, that was a bit much, but she's looking all great, like nothing happened now.
Right. Well, you know, she is a witch. She does have the power to, I guess, maybe heal herself. And then apparently we don't know how long the timeline has been since Increase tortured her to now. We do know that the whole of season one took place in a 6-week span.
Okay.
We find that out in the first episode of season two, when Cotton Mather has reported back to Boston to, I guess the other clerics that sent him to Salem in the first place. We find out that it's only been 6 weeks. So all of season one took place within a 6-week span. So there was so much going on. And, you know, it's just kind of like, now we've got to see there's so much that they introduced to us in the last episode of season one. And in the new season, we find out at the end of season one that Mary Sibley's baby is actually not dead, that the witches actually took him and raised him. And he is now a living, breathing
boy
child that is controlled by the witches. I guess they're using him as leverage to keep Mary in check.
And I don't know how. Yeah, but we also found out that, well, they're dead now, so we don't know about that. But we also found out that he has a little bit of maybe power or insight of his own. And also, for some odd reason, he's been living in, I don't know, some sort of orphanage or something, and they refuse to give him a name. So he has no name.
Right.
Like, how is that? Do they just call you boy, or how does that work?
I don't know, but I'm not very well versed in anything having to do with witchcraft and I guess the lore or whatever you want to call it. But I think it has some. Well, that too. I'm not religious at all, so I only know bits and pieces from what I remember the few years I went to church. But I know that something about giving a person a name kind of, I guess, gives them an identity, gives them a certain power. So maybe they're doing that on purpose, again, in an effort to control Mary, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Well, his words were, they won't give me a name until I'm baptized. So yeah, you could have a point. Like, maybe he can't, if he had one prior to baptism, it would be too powerful. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
or
know.
Maybe, but that's a thing in Puritans do. I'm not sure.
Right. So I don't know. But it's going to be interesting how this all plays out with Mr. John Alden, who at the end of last season was shot. and believed to be dead. And it turns out that now he is living with a Native American tribe that has been in the area forever, which looking back over his history, when he was at war, he was actually injured in the war, and the Native Americans took him in. They nursed him back to health, and he kind of became one with their with a certain tribe. And he is now with this tribe, plotting the destruction of all the witches. He did find out at the end of last season that Mary Sibley was a witch, which he was not not happy with. And now his agenda is to go back to Salem and rid the town of all the witches. And his plan is to kill every last one of them, including the mother of his unknown child.
Which that bothers me. It bothers me because it's just such a 180. Who shot him? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I'm actually planning to go back and rewatch season one sometime this week, just so I can have a better understanding and just to kind of refresh my memory on what happened, because it's been so long. You know, the show was on hiatus forever. Almost what, 10 months since the show aired. So there's a lot of details that I've kind of forgotten. I do know that he was shot.
I didn't remember he was shot. So you're doing better than I am.
I remember him being shot. Just don't remember what the circumstances were. I know at some point there was a threat to him in the town. Someone who he fought in the war with, and was planning on telling some misdeeds he did during the war. And
he was a wanted man because he was in the war. He got injured and was saved by Native Americans, but he kind of went air quote native and started fighting against the American soldiers, and he killed several of them. And because of that, he, you know, was a wanted man. And I think maybe he was punished for it, or he was a fugitive or something like that. So he went back to Salem for some reason that I forgot. And then someone who knew him from that time knew that he was a fugitive and threatened to rat him out. And then he killed that guy, or maybe Mary killed that guy. And
I think John killed him. John killed him, and it has something to do with when John was with the Native Americans. I believe he attacked. There were some people who attacked the tribe. You know, regular white folk. So he actually killed a lot of them, and I think no one else knows that about him. Right. But he actually killed people, you know, that he was supposed to be fighting for, and that was what the guy was coming back to tell. But yeah, I do believe that John killed him. And I don't remember how it came about that he got shot. You know, I guess we're gonna have to do another podcast. we're gonna have to do some rewatching it and come back to that. But it's just, there's a lot of complexity in this show with even just the few characters that are there. There's just so much going on, and so much that we haven't even touched on.
He actually was outed with that secret. And it was during his, he had a trial because he was going to be on trial via Increase Mather for being a witch. But he's like, no, I'm not a witch. Yes, I do have a secret, but it was not witchcraft. I'm a murderer. And so he told the story of it. And so I think was supposed to be hung at the stake anyway, because Increase was crazy. And instead, maybe he was trying to save Mary or something and got shot. I don't know. I know we're driving somebody crazy. Like, why do you even talk about this if you forget? Well, we're talking about the season premiere, damn it. So we try to give you some ideas like why we like this show and why it's so intense. And we've covered some things, but there's one major appearance that we have not discussed, Hanako.
Are we talking about Anne? Or are we talking about the new people like Lucy Lawless?
There you go, girl.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I was like, who the hell is Anne?
Anne is the, you know, she was Catherine Tudor. Yes, the redhead who found out that she found out accidentally that she's a witch.
Oh, because she killed her parent. That was Xander Berkeley from 24.
Yes. Yes. And from Nikita, and which is funny because he and Shane West both were on Nikita together, and now they're on this show together.
Oh.
But
that man was on like everything. 12. He's 12 Monkeys, 24. He was in Transcendence, The Mentalist, Longmire, Booth at the End, Nikita, like you said.
He's an everything. He's an everything.
Okay. So Lucy Lawless. Evil. She choked a man that was standing across the room from any water whatsoever.
But you know what? And the cold thing about it was the man, she was in the tub. She got up, and of course she's naked, which we didn't get to see. But he's averting his eyes, and as a gift to him, she invites him to look upon her fully. And this is the last image he sees before he's choked to death on her bathwater, which is still in her bathtub. And let me just say, Lucy Lawless is the head witch in charge. It's about to be some problems in Salem.
That's going to be a fight between her, Mercy, and Lady Sibley.
That's about to be. And then, of course, Anne, because she's... We see in the previews for the season, I don't know if not just the promo for next week's episode, but just in the trailer for the whole season for Salem, we see that Lucy Lawless's character, she comes to Anne, I guess to whether she's going to mentor her or form an alliance or whatever the case. We already see Mary Sibley is trying to get in there with Anne. She's trying to quote unquote help her control her anger and control her powers, you know, basically trying to get her on her side for this impending war that's going to happen, the witches' war. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how that's going to happen, but apparently Lucy Lawless's character is one of the oldest witches there is. So that's going to be interesting, because now you've got all these people trying to be head witch in charge, and it's just not going to happen. So there's going to be some people falling by the wayside. So
yeah, I think Mercy would not make a good leader, because she's three shades of crazy. I mean, she knows is
just three
pain. Well, she knows pain. She knows pain and anger and fear and betrayal and abuse, and that's all she knows. She hasn't had any kindness happen to her in a while, and the kindness that has happened to her was like a lie. So,
right.
I just don't think she's a good leader. Lady Sibley, she tried to paint herself as a good guy, but she's not really all that good either. You know, she's done some things, and she's not a hero of the show. And I mean, because like, I don't think anybody except for new Dr. McDreamy, who's dealing with science, he's not.
Stuart Townsend, yes. Oh, and his veiled sexual innuendos to Miss Sibley, to Lady Sibley.
They're veiled, huh?
Well, you know, I'm an adult, so I saw right through that. Because I was like, yes, okay. But it's Stuart Townsend.
So that's who that is. Okay.
Yes. Stuart Townsend, you know, he was Lestat in Queen of the Damned.
I refuse to watch that.
He was Dorian Gray in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That was him. I haven't seen him in a while. No wonder. Like, where has he been? What has he been in?
I don't know, but I'm glad he's on my TV.
No, he was in Betrayal. I don't know what that is. He was in Elementary. CBS is weird, so I never get to watch CBS. He was, oh, he was the new Night Stalker back in 2005. Did you watch that?
That was a good show. No, I didn't, but that was one of those, that was during a time when I really was not into watching TV as much as I am now. I think the only show that I really was watching at that time was probably Supernatural. So, well,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, so, but yeah, so I'm just really excited to see what he and Lucy Lawless both are going to bring to the table. Those are two phenomenal actors. Love them dearly. So I'm excited.
You know, because I was really taken aback by Lucy Lawless's appearance on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She was there for one measly episode and then died. Like, what was that about? Like, you don't bring on Lucy Lawless just to kill her in the first episode. You bring her in for an arc or something. But not for whatever that was. They totally misused her, and I'm still bitter, as you can quite tell.
But that's okay, because she's on Salem now, which is cool.
But you know she's going to die. She's not a star, so she's going to die.
I don't know. She's the oldest witch. So she might have a few tricks up her sleeve.
Nah, she's going to be the Stephen Lang of this season. She's going to come in, chew on the scenery, act a fool, and then going to get gap. And I feel bad for Stuart Townsend because, you know, he's going to die a needless, senseless death. He does not believe in witchcraft. So he's going to be
a little faith.
I feel because he's coming there all innocent and full of science. And he's just, poor thing, Hanako, poor thing. You know, he's going to get turned inside out by the witchcraft.
Maybe.
So I mean, they have this weird plague, and the plague was the thing that was the what is it called, the Grand Rite. That's what started it.
Yes, it's called the they're calling it the witch pox, similar to smallpox. But yeah, it was something that Isaac unwittingly unleashed when he was getting ripped.
Right, so the doctor said that he was patient zero and he was going to help cure it. And what else?
Yeah, that they would be able to figure out where it started with him. Because, yeah, Isaac was pretty much patient zero. Right. But we don't know how that's going to play out, because we know that Mary Sibley has a soft spot in her heart for Isaac. But at the same time, if this is the case, then Isaac can also be her undoing, you know, which I don't think Isaac would betray her. But at the same time,
wasn't he going to, though? And that's how he got, who gave him that pox? I forgot.
He got it in the woods, apparently. I cannot think of what they called the little item, the little apple thing that they needed for the parent.
Okay.
He had it in his pocket. I think he was supposed to get rid of it for her or something. And it was doing something. It was beating or it was doing something. And he looked into it and he did something and it kind of exploded in his face. And that was kind of where his sickness started.
Okay. And so he spread it to other people, right?
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Or I don't even think he's spread it to anybody because he was still in the woods, but I think when it opened, it kind of went airborne. I think that was what happened. And according to Mary Sibley, anybody who has witch blood in their DNA, they can't be affected by it. So
there's a lot of damn witches in that town.
Well, you know, I mean, they could be just like Anne, not even knowing that that's part of their bloodline. So, but, and of course, she and probably only a scattered few others are aware of that fact that witches can't be tainted by it. So,
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
Now, the guy that got drowned by Lucy Lawless's bathwater, he was in town asking questions, but I still, because I didn't recognize him, I didn't know what he was doing. And so
he was the person at the beginning of the episode when Cotton Mather was back in Boston.
Right.
He was the one talking to him saying, we sent you to Salem to find, you know, to find out, to put an end to this whole witch thing. And since you've been there, there have been 13 hangings, this, that, and other. Basically, I think he was part of the group that sent Cotton to Salem to kind of get a handle on it.
Well, and then, not to interrupt you, but then why was Increase Mather sent there?
Increase, I think, was sent there because, one, as a father and as the control freak that we kind of saw Increase being, I think he just wanted to make sure that his son was doing what he was supposed to be doing. But again, Cotton was supposed to go there and kind of contain the problem. And as he was there, you know, they hung 13 people as witches. You know, the situation kind of got out of hand. And so I think it was more so to try to contain the situation and to try to rein Cotton in. Because, you know, for a while, Cotton started kind of going crazy with his obsession about it up until he and John Alden saw with their own eyes what was going on. You know, and I think at that point, he was just kind of, he was losing it because I guess in theory, you can say yes. Witches exist. This is what they do. But when you see people walking around with animal heads and bodies coming out the ground, and just, I think that probably does something to someone of Cotton stature. And you know, he wasn't too right in the head anyway.
Like, not said, at all weak minded.
He was a religious man, but he was very, very simple. He fell in love with the prostitute. He was hanging people right and left. Just, you know, it was just. You know, he just, I think they were just basically trying to get a grip on him. And they basically, he was the guy that told him, you are under no circumstances allowed to leave Boston. You must stay here.
Well, he was exiled, basically, right?
Telling him he can't go to Salem. But now we see that he may have had a dual purpose because Lucy Lawless was using him to try to find out what information Cotton Mather knew.
Oh.
And now that he's no longer serves his purpose, he gets to drown while glazing, you know, gazing upon her naked body. But okay, I mean, there's worse ways to go in the land of Salem. I mean, he could have been tortured. He could have been hung. He could have been, you know, some of those witches died pretty bad deaths.
Increase Mather use the same tools that one of the vampires used on True Blood or something? Like, that was happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? And yeah. I was just like, this is way too much for my life.
Yeah. Now, like Increase is not for the weak of heart.
No, it's not. Is Increase a name or a title? I don't
know. No, I think that was his name.
That's weird.
Yeah, but Cotton is not any better. So it's
that is a bizarre name. Because.
But it's the 1600s. Okay. So.
Yeah, we're gonna walk away from that.
We'll just walk away from that.
I thought Increase was a title this whole time, like a preacher or something. I don't know. That's just a weird name, but okay.
I think his
problem was no woman wanting to moan that out at night. Or I mean, because you know. Okay, let me stop. okay, let me say, increase it. Okay, no, it's okay. No. Get it together, cat.
Yep.
Okay, so Anne, she was the young little hot thing that was leading John on, you know, trying to come between John and Lady Sibley. Because this almost was a really sweet love story. Almost.
Yeah, except for the fact that John Alden was in his 20s and Anne is supposed to be like 16 or 17, maybe. I mean, she was still... She was pretty much still a child.
Well, no, you know, I think I led that wrong. I mean, this was almost a nice love story between Lady Sibley and John. And then Anne brought the weirdness in with being too young and trying to, I'm an adult. I'm not a kid anymore. Look at my teeth. Yeah. And I'm just like, put those away. But I really wanted her to die because I just, her character was obnoxious. She didn't bring anything to the table for me, but apparently we don't get Xander Berkeley anymore.
Apparently she's about to.
Yeah, well, we Xander Berkeley is dead, but she remains. That is a crime.
Well, you know, I got nothing.
Yeah!
I got nothing. I mean, because Magistrate Hale was, he was, his character was a bit complex. It's like he had the best intentions for the coven. And at the same time, he was trying to, you know, he was a doting father. We could see that. He loved his daughter. But of course, when you're trying to live two separate lives mm-hmm. at the same time, mm-hmm. something's got to give. And it's just the fact that he lied about what he was to his daughter. And she had to find out in a very harsh and bizarre way. You know, she put on his mask and she was transported to the woods. And,
oh, man.
You know, she was lost out there for almost a whole day. And, you know, it was kind of like she had some realizations come to her. And she was one of those people who was so against the whole witch thing. And then she finds out that her dad is a witch. And then also she starts being haunted and tortured. You know, Mary gave her a doll that doll was creepy. You know, the doll was looking at her and it was following her. And it was just, no, you know,
dolls are terrible.
She got, you know, she was introduced to the whole, oh, I have the blood of a witch thing very harshly. And she snapped. She killed both of her parents in very gory fashion. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing the consequences of that, or we're seeing the after effects of that. You know, she's depressed. She's upset. She tried to commit suicide. And her body basically was like, oh, no, we're not having that. We've got too much to do. So her character may have been a minor annoyance in season one, but I have a feeling she's going to be really, really, she's going to be really, really important in this season.
So how much you want to bet with me right now that Anne and Mercy are going to have a fight? An epic fight to end all fights.
Yeah, I think I kind of see it going that way. But the thing is, I don't know on which side, because both of the alpha witches, Mary Sibley and I can't remember what Lucy Lawless's character's
Zaynel. Name.
Okay, call her that for now. But you know, both of them are trying to get Anne on their side. Mary still is trying to appeal to Mercy Lewis, which is falling on deaf ears. And besides, I wouldn't want her in my camp. Mm-hmm. We already know what kind of treachery she's, you know, got up her sleeve. I mean, she basically turned on you when you took her in and you tried to teach her. She put you and your closest confidant at odds, because now she and Tituba are not, they don't see eye to eye anymore. And
that was unfortunate.
You pretty much... Yeah, it is, but I have a feeling those two will at least maybe work their way back towards each other. But Mercy, she's wreaking havoc all over the place.
Because the thing that Lady Sibley said, we're gonna handle this witch problem together. We're gonna deal with it. But at the end, you're gonna come to a bad end at the end of this all of this shit. And then Tituba just walked out. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember it.
So I don't think that
BFFs. So
no, they're not. Besides, they were BFFs under duress, because number one, Tituba was always like, "You need to do this for the witches," and blah blah blah. And then, you know, she always held over Sibley's head that, you know, you did this bad thing, and you don't want it to get out. And not only that, Lady Sibley was her air quote master or mistress. So it was a never equal relationship. Both of them had something over each other. Both of them were kind of superior to each other in one or some ways, but not the same way. And they had equal. It was just never a real friendship. You know what I'm saying?
But, you know, at the same time, I don't know if it was ever as simple as that, because yes, Mary Sibley was Tituba's mistress or whatever, but I always felt like for the most part, Tituba had the upper hand up until towards the end of the season, because, you know, it's almost like Tituba was in that position just to keep an eye. I think she was in that, she was put in that position at first to kind of pull Mary into the whole witchcraft thing. And then I think she stayed on in that position to kind of keep an eye on her and to make sure that she was doing what she was supposed to be doing, what as far as what the elder witches said, just like they told Mercy Lewis, they said, she does not control us, we control her. And I think they were using Tituba as kind of that gatekeeper to make sure that Mary stayed in her lane, that she did what she was supposed to do. And, you know, because I always kind of got that feeling that even though Mary was the dominant, supposed to be the dominant force, that Tituba was the one who was more so in control. Unfortunately, now that has shifted. But I think that also started shifting when Mary tried to pull Mercy into the fold. And Tituba basically told her, she was like, look, I have done everything for you. I helped get you this power. I helped put you where you are. And now you cast me aside. And so I think it was more so that was when the tide started turning.
Well, the only reason she had to take Mercy in was because Mercy started to become more powerful and resist Mary's witchcraft control, right? And so she was like, well, you know, it's better to have the evil, you know, keep your enemies closer, blah, 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 right. You know? So, and then yeah. It just got out of control because, like you said earlier, Mercy started to play them against each other. And Lady Sibley at one point had to publicly denounce Tituba as a witch in order to save herself. Right.
Right.
And then that's right. When Tituba was like, oh, hell no. Cause she got, you know, the torture chamber would increase with the gyne tools and the.
And I don't think it was that. I don't think, if I remember correctly, I don't think it was that Mary threw her under the bus. I think what happened was Mercy threw Tituba under yes. the bus, and it was kind of unexpected. And at the time that the way that she was exposed out in the open in the public square in front of everyone. And when mm-hmm. when they pulled back and saw her, as you call it, her teeth, where her familiar was feeds from, it was like there wasn't really much Mary could do without yeah. blowing her own cover. And I think Tituba understood that too. So I don't think she holds that against her, because at the end of the day, I think their goal is whatever is needed for the coven, whatever sacrifices they have to make. We see Tituba is down. She's for the coven. She has no other priorities in her life. Mary, on the other hand, at that point was conflicted because she was still trying to be with John. She was trying to keep those aspects of her life separate. And at the same time, she was, you know, I think at one point she was contemplating leaving with him, mm-hmm. but she knew she couldn't do that. So I don't think it was necessarily that she threw Tituba under the bus. I think she was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because and it was at this point that Mercy took off, because she knew, oh, I fucked up. You know, she's going to kill me if she can get to me. And that was when Mercy kind of took off for her home in the woods. And that's kind of where the story has brought us as far as those three characters. But I don't know. As far as getting back to the Mercy versus Anne battle or debate, I don't see them being on opposite sides in this, meaning one of them siding with Mary and the other one siding with Xena, as you say, because neither one of them, Mercy nor Anne, particularly care for Mary Sibley, especially now that Anne knows what Mary is. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't particularly like her, but I don't know if I don't know if Anne dislikes her enough to go against her.
Well, so, I think Anne is feeling a little bit lost now, and she needs to know, like, hey, she can't go to jail because she kind of accidentally killed her parents. But, like, if anybody were to, like, go CSI Salem and discover that, hey, this is weird circumstances. Hey, they kind of died. Which, like, hey, they do not have pox on them. They didn't die from the freaking plague. Wait a minute. You know? So she really doesn't want anybody to find out her parents died under curious circumstances, because if they do, then it might lead to her becoming a witch. So I think it's smart for her to, like, kind of button it up, let Mary do her thing. But this is almost the same road that Mercy was on, with the exception that she did not torture Anne with a frog or a face mask and parade her through the town in rags.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know. We shall see.
I don't know if they're going to actually be on, like you said, a side, the, like, Mary side or Xena side. I think they're just going to be in conflict with each other. Because, like, if Mercy's crazy, and if she sees that, if Mercy sees that Lady Sibley takes on a fresh new young babe witch, then Mercy probably is going to get jealous and try to kill her and say, you are going to treat her just like me, or bleh, and you know, you never know.
I don't know, because I think there's a little bit of animosity between Mercy and Anne to begin with. I think we saw a little bit of that in season one, right around the time Mercy first started kind of going her own way. She encountered Anne in the woods, I think. She was either leaving church or she was going somewhere, and she came up to her and she got kind of snippy with her.
Who got snippy with who?
Mercy got snippy with Anne.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it wasn't necessarily a hate, but she was just throwing her a little shade. And Mary Sibley, I think, came and kind of diffused the situation really quickly. But yeah, so I think there's already a sense of dislike with them, which could be because, you know, Anne, of course, like I said, her parents weren't perfect, but they clearly doted on her. You know, she was raised with both of her parents. She was raised in what I guess for that time could be a loving environment, whereas Mercy was not.
Oh, and she wasn't raped. So there's that.
Right. So, and I think she may, you know, there may be a little bit of animosity from Mercy for that. So that's probably going to play into all of this too. And then once she realizes that Anne is a witch, I think that's when the real problems are going to come in.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So yeah, oh, Hanukkah, we're back, girl.
You got a lot, you know. Salem is going to get. I think Salem is going to give us a lot to talk about this this season, which is good because The Walking Dead is on hiatus, and it's given me something to look forward to every week, because Salem has, there's so many layers to this show, as far as the characters, as far as the conflict. And so I'm very excited to see where it's going to go.
I am too. And I almost watched that Salem, the Real Salem special 20-minute thing they had, but I ran out of time and then I forgot about it. But yeah, I think we should do a rewatch, and I'm doing some sewing right now, and I was watching Star Wars, but I might switch over to watch Salem again because I did forget a lot and I don't want to get yelled at by our listeners. We don't want that, right, Hanukkah?
No, we don't.
Because they will yell at our asses. But Yeah, but this one is like, if you miss True Blood and the witch stuff with that, if you miss, you know, if you want something a little harder edge than what goes on with Bonnie and Vampire Diaries, if you miss like the witch stuff from Buffy, I think this is a more like Game of Thrones witch.
Yes, this is like more hardcore. Yeah.
So I think it's really good. I would like for them to go a little bit more into history and do some more historic things, because I felt like it was more of that in the first season. So I would like some more historic things. I guess I would first have to know more about the history of Salem to recognize that. So yeah.
Well, we've got what, at least 7 weeks.
Yeah.
So we will probably get a little more in depth with this one.
Yeah, we will. So this is one we're going to keep up with. I think Hanako, let me flip to the back of my book. We are going to cover Supernatural. Hanako is holding us back on that one.
I will be done by Friday, I promise.
I'm going to be gone the whole weekend. So let's
okay,
see.
Okay, well I'll be done by Thursday then. How about Thursday?
Maybe
we'll get it done.
Maybe that'll
Thursday.
Be good. So we're gonna recap what's going on with Supernatural, because I think this is the 10th season, and by the 10th season of say Stargate, that show was getting a little, I couldn't watch it anymore. But this 10th season of Supernatural is amazing.
It's been phenomenal. It has.
I can't believe it. How fresh it feels still.
Yes. It almost feels like it feels a little bit like the beginning. You know, they've kind of gotten away from so much of the heaven versus hell, angels versus the demons. And it's getting a little bit back to the, you know, we still have the issue with Dean and the Mark of Cain, but it feels a little more, I don't know, it feels a little more organic to me now.
Yeah,
it feels a little bit like the beginning. Yeah. You know, as far as, you know, and then you've got the standalone episodes here and there, as far as going back to hunting the monsters. So I'm liking it. So I'm only behind the episodes that they've done since they've gotten back from hiatus. But
yeah, that's not much.
You know, there's three episodes. I can probably
do that. Yeah, you can slam
tomorrow.
That tonight or tomorrow. Yeah. But I will, you know, we won't get into it a lot right now, but I will say that I do agree. Like, this is one show where they do standalone episodes well. Like, I think, like, for X-Files, when they did standalone episodes, they kind of drugged me. I wasn't really into them. I like the alien conspiracy arc, and yay, X-Files is coming back, by the way. But yay. I really think that Supernatural thrives with a balance of these monster or hunts of the week and just a tiny bit of an arc. Because once those arcs got heavy, they could, some of them were really good in some seasons and some of them were really tiresome.
Yeah.
So we're gonna pick up on Supernatural. Hanako has threatened to come murder me in my sleep if we do not do Orphan Black. So that's gonna happen.
Yes.
There are some few other things, Hanako, that I'm gonna list off that's coming up that perhaps you might want to watch or whatever. I still need to catch up on Lost Girls. I mean, Lost Girl. I'm thinking
Lost
of the Lost
Girl,
Boys.
Yeah.
I still want to watch that.
I'm in the middle of season 4, and what I found out was, I think, is it this season, season 5 or season 6? One of those, I think, whatever the season is that's coming up, I think that's the last season. So it's ending.
Well, yeah, I'm just...
We'll talk about that on a whole other podcast.
I just wasn't there. There's a new show, Marvel's Daredevil is coming up, but first I need to catch up on like Gotham and Flash and all the Arrow and stuff, but I'm gonna get to that. There's one called The Messengers, I think is on the CW. It's gonna be what, Powers, or I'm not really sure. Penny Dreadful is coming up. Do you watch that one?
You know what? I caught the first two episodes when it first started, and then I didn't have cable for a long time, so that was one of those that kind of fell on the back burner. I am planning on watching that this week as well.
Okay, it's Showtime.
Before
Yep. It's on Showtime. So if you have Showtime, you can catch it. Oh, girl, then you catch up with that, because I think...
I got everything. I told you, I'm trying to get back into this. I have everything.
I still have the cable cut, so I catch up when I can. But Penny Dreadful, I'd say Hanako, is edgier than Salem, because Salem sometimes kind of twirls the mustache a little too much. But Penny Dreadful is just so dark, you know, but it's dark in a way that... you look into a mirror dark some sort of way. I'm not really sure, but it is really good. I really think you'll like Penny Dreadful.
Oh, I will, just simply for the fact that Ava Green is in it. I love her as an actress. And even just the first two episodes, I was like, oh, she just love her. So, yeah, I would definitely be catching up with that within the next couple of weeks as well.
This one is for Carl to groan about. M. Night is coming out with a show called Wayward Pines. I'll force him to watch that. He doesn't know yet, but he's going to be forced to watch that. The Wachowskis is coming out with something called Sense 8, and it's going to be a Netflix show just like Marvel's Daredevil. Okay. Let's see. Extant with Halle Berry is coming back. And so Carl and I were watching that. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of shows. Let's see, that I think you'll be into. The West World on HBO is coming. That was a great film.
Speaking of HBO, you know that they have now, they have released their freestanding streaming service.
Yeah, I know.
So you can do HBO streaming now without having a cable package. You do have to accept the terms of use from Apple. And I think at the moment they're doing a 30-day free trial. So
are you trying to tell me about HBO for a reason, ma'am?
Well, I'm just saying it because you mentioned HBO, but now that you bring that up, listeners, please call in and tell this woman that she needs to watch Game of Thrones.
I'm done.
We have been trying to get her to watch
this show.
You
know what? Hanako has been invited to have a spinoff Sci-Fi Party Line podcast, by which she is in charge of the Game of Thrones discussion. We need to, listeners, call in and get her to step up to said plate.
Okay, I may be doing that. We've already talked about the fact that I'm going to be doing one for Walking Dead when they come back in the fall. Boom. So yeah, maybe me and Eric can get together and do Game of Thrones.
You guys would love it.
Yes.
Because
so I'll talk to him about that. Yeah.
So, okay. We'll do that. Man, it's hurting my soul because I need my shows to feed me. You know, I need them to feed and give me life, Hanako. And Game of Thrones was sucking the life out of me, man.
Oh.
It was sucking the life out of me. It's not a joy when you already know everybody's going to die. What's the point?
But it's still such a phenomenal show.
What's the point?
But that's okay. We'll just have to agree to disagree with this one. We'll just have to.
That's
we'll
why
have
you to got agree your to own disagree show.
In order to keep our friendship intact.
Yeah, she was getting cranky with me. Nah, but that's some of the things we have looking forward to. Of course, you know, Sci-Fi Party Line, we're not perfect. Cat's in school, so we're trying to, you know, get some of our listeners to, you know, hey, if you think you have a good personality and you want to, you know, come on the show and you can yell at Hanako and get her to watch something that she wouldn't watch now. you know, we'd love to have you. Because we're a party and we're a family. And we, you know, the more the merrier. That's what I like
to
say.
As you can tell, we like to have fun. So.
Yes, we do. Okay. So that is our show, guys. We'd love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Go to our website. Leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. And watch. Go ahead. Go to iTunes and leave us a comment there as well.
Yep, you can find us online on Twitter and at Gmail. I am HMR Potter. Kat is at Fancy Fembot. You can reach us both at Sci-Fi Party Line on Facebook, Google Plus, and Stitcher Radio.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye. Keep my head up tight. I'm your guy.